Welcome into the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Charlie Goldsmith. We are coming right from an exciting game at Paul Brown Stadium. We're just talking to Zach Taylor, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, talked to a number of the Bengals players, and we're here to break it all down. So, Charlie, let's just start with our initial takeaways from this thrilling overtime game the Bengals had to start the season off 1-0.
So Joe Burrow had a line where there's a lot to unpack. He said he didn't think they would have won this game last year. Mm-hmm. And there are so many ways you could take that. With Burrow, I don't think last year he is there mechanically to make that 50-yard throw to touchdown throw to Ja'Marr Chase. I don't think the Bengals have that weapon like Ja'Marr who could stretch the field the way he did. Defensively, so many of the game-changing plays were sacks from pressure they got up the middle. Yep. The Bengals wouldn't have been able to make that type of play last season. Jesse Bates has continued to progress in his ability as a run defender, and that continued with a few notable highlight plays, and also he was right in the mix for the defensive play of the game to force a fumble. And then lastly, a kicker. They didn't have a kicker who could have made a game-winning field goal the way Evan McPherson did last season. So for all the talk about how much the Bengals have or had not improved, they really did back that up in a number of those areas.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought that quote up because Joe Burrow's right, and you obviously covered every single game last year. But what I saw from the Bengals today was, although they are a relatively young team in terms of their main player leaders are Joe Mixon, Joe Burrow, Jesse Bates, these guys are all, what, younger than 25, they weren't going to take their foot off the gas. And when the Bengals offense, and we'll break every quarter down for you here, but when the Bengals offense started to stall out there in the third and fourth quarter, the defense never gave up. And that when I've seen some of the teams that have gone on to make the playoffs and have been some of the better teams I've covered, there's always that element of complementary football. You hope that your offense is perfect every time they go out on the field. Same thing with defense. But it's truly a team effort. And sometimes it's going to be the defense that continuously has to make plays just to give the offense back the ball one more time. And that's exactly what happened with the Bengals today.
And what was interesting, too, is that it didn't happen right away. Mm-hmm. The Bengals offense really was quick game screens, short passes and runs for, I believe, the first three series of the game. Mm-hmm. But then to open up that series with about 6 minutes left in the second quarter, the Bengals went five out, and it looked like Joe Burrow was unlocked. He was finding Ja'Marr Chase open, reading the defense, finding the weakness in the Vikings zone. That drive ended, or basically ended, where Burrow found a one-on-one matchup with Higgins and a cornerback that he liked, a cornerback he thought was too aggressive, and, you know, threw a great ball to Higgins that turned into a pass interference. Mm-hmm. So over and over again, they continued to show progressions in these different areas that was really impressive.
Right. So let's kind of go quarter by quarter and just talk about some of the highlights or major plays in this game. First, you were just talking about kind of the first quarter for the offense. It was a little bit of a slow start for them to get into a rhythm, but that obviously changed. The Ja'Marr Chase catch on third down, I think, was a huge play in terms of confidence for Ja'Marr and the offense. Obviously, it's been well documented on this podcast everywhere. Ja'Marr Chase in the preseason had some struggles catching the ball. He makes a critical catch on third down to keep the Bengals on the field, keep the chains moving, give them some momentum. And I think things really started to click then. Were there any other plays in the first quarter that really stood out to you that you can think back on?
Yeah, well, those were just short drives. Mm-hmm. And I think they only had one first down on that drive, and it was a five-play drive. So what stood out was it kind of felt like similar play calling to the preseason at first. Mm-hmm. I think they netted like 15 total yards at one point. And then what you saw was a real progression and a real almost unlocking of the rest of the Bengals offense once the Vikings took the lead.
Yeah, so you're heading into the second quarter. The game looked very evenly matched. And we talked about that heading into the game. The rosters and the storylines kind of resembled a lot with these two teams. And then things obviously started to change in the second quarter. First, the Bengals kick it off with, and it's crazy, we're forgetting to mention this, T. Higgins touchdown. That was a great play by Joe Burrow. I think that was the play that we've talked a lot about, the Bengals offensive line needing to be better on that play in specific. I remember sitting in the press box saying, wow, his pocket was pretty clean for him to find T. Higgins and get through maybe his first or second progression on that play.
And that's been a huge talking point, where the Bengals finding their red zone threats. Yep. And I've always believed that that was going to be T. Higgins, because he has gotten so much bigger and stronger. He was already that, having touchdown catches even in week two and week three last season against the Browns and the Eagles. It was on that type of play, and that had been Higgins' strength kind of all along. So it was, you know, kind of expected that they would turn back to him. But then, of course, the evolution and how he was able to impact different plays after that was Higgins taking the next step.
And then defensively, it kind of seemed like the Vikings, obviously, their game plan revolved around Dalvin Cook, but the Bengals did a really good job slowing him down. But it really seemed like the Vikings took advantage of Eli Apple outside at cornerback. Obviously, Trey Waynes didn't play with the hamstring injury. We don't know when he's going to be back, but Eli Apple is not the Bengals starting cornerback, and it really seemed like their game plan revolved around attacking Eli Apple. And he had a few missed tackles that were costly in the Vikings getting on the score.
Yep.
The scoreboard.
He had that missed tackle on a reception down the sideline on third and really long that kept the Vikings on the field. The very next play, he commits defensive holding. Mm-hmm. And after that, he just loses Adam Thielen and kind of falls to the ground as the Vikings score. But this is something you'll have to go back and look for. The Vikings really didn't try to test that again. I have to look back to see if the Bengals made a mechanical adjustment or if they just found their rhythm over the middle of the field. Because after that, it was just Thielen and Jefferson over the middle, really attacking the Bengals linebackers.
Do you think that I don't know if there was a technical adjustment the Bengals made, and which I'll be looking forward to hearing what you find there. But also, they couldn't get out of their own way. I mean, that might be a big reason of why, because I have not seen a game like this in terms of how many penalties the Vikings had. And by the way, Bengals fans that were at Paul Brown Stadium, Joe Mixon, Joe Burrow, and Zach Taylor all commending the crowd and saying that they were the reason for those false start penalties that really put the Vikings at a disarray almost the entire first half through the whole game. I mean, I think, don't quote me on this, but it was upwards of the 11 penalties for over 100 yards from the Vikings. And that's not what you want. You do not want to be, you know, giving yourself these third and 20s or, you know, first down and 20. And so when you say, I don't know what happened, I immediately think, okay, there was a number of plays there in the second quarter where the Vikings couldn't get out of their own way because they were holding or, you know, all these different things. So that was definitely a big factor in the game. The Vikings couldn't really ever get into a rhythm because they kept shooting themselves in the foot.
Well, until the third quarter, where they just kept exploiting the same weakness in the Bengals defense. The Bengals tried a lot, and again, I'll have to look more back on this, but I saw a lot more three safety approaches than they did last season.
Yeah.
I saw a lot more Darius Phillips playing a hybrid role on third down than I saw last season. Mm-hmm. Akeem Davis-Gaither had a nice play, but aside from that, I don't remember too many notable moments from linebackers in passing coverage. The Bengals were up 21-7, and they allowed the Vikings to get back in the game, not because of how their outside corners were playing, but over how their defenders were playing in the middle of the field. Cousins kind of dinked and dunked his way to then they got to the point where they tied the score heading into overtime. That was that last entire drive as well. Cousins kind of slow blow by blow, getting up, I believe, 60 yards into field goal range for them to get into overtime.
Yeah, and one of the biggest plays of the game was, and Joe Burrow talked about it after the game, is we talked about Ja'Marr Chase's 50-yard touchdown and that being significant for many reasons, but it was probably the most significant for the fact that the Bengals were able to go up 14-7, and then they knew they were going to get the ball back to start the second half. And he talked about how that's something where historically he's seen the New England Patriots be really good at, that kind of double dip approach where you score right before the half and you get the ball back. That's when you can really change a game. And that's exactly what they did. The first offensive drive of the game in the third quarter ends with a Joe Mixon 2-yard touchdown run, and it really felt like at 21-7, all right, the Bengals might be stealing this game. But then things changed in the third quarter drastically. The Bengals were pretty much not able to do anything offensively after that touchdown.
What they really started to do was especially rely on the run. Mm-hmm. And I saw less of the wide open passing game elements for a stretch, which again is fine. You can't keep that consistently all game. The play that obviously stands out is 4th and 1 from the 30 going for it. I think that's like kind of the most distinctive play call that Zach Taylor has made throughout his career. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll be talking about that play for a while, just in terms of as we learn more about Zach as a coach. But what he showed is, you know, we're going to be aggressive. And that could have been a turning point for the game in the Bengals' direction had they converted. He said he did it because they thought they were going to put the Vikings away with one more fourth down conversion, then be able to run out the clock the rest of the third and really take a commanding lead. Instead, of course, they let the Vikings get in scoring position. They scored. They tied the score, and the game kind of unraveled from there. But again, as we learn more about who Zach Taylor is as a coach with a team that's not very bad like it has been the past few years, you get to see more of these defining qualities, and Zach Taylor showed some of what he's made of today.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Zach was asked about that following the game, and he said on that play in specific, he wished he could take that one back. No play caller is able to get it right 100% of the time. So obviously that one was magnified because had the Bengals not won, you could say that ended up being the momentum changer of the game, but it ended up not being the case. But it will be interesting to kind of go through the film and hear from Zach Taylor tomorrow about, you're right, the change of approach in the third and fourth quarter. They kind of went away from their passing game. And I thought that was interesting because it's undoubtedly, no disrespect to Joe Mixon, because he is definitely a bonus for this offense, but the Bengals' strength is Joe Burrow and those wide receivers, and they showed that in the first half. So I was a little bit surprised at just kind of the directional change that Zach Taylor went in the third and fourth quarter in terms of more run plays.
Yeah, I mean, part of it too is Joe Mixon, I think, had over 100 yards rushing, mm-hmm. and Joe Mixon played really well, and that was a part of the game where they established the wide zone elements that they'd been speaking about. I think they were just missing out on a few first downs here or there, and you know, at the end of the day, that's not the biggest deal. The biggest value they see in Joe Mixon is his ability to really run out the clock in those situations with his bruising physical style, and I noticed quite a few times that he was delivering on that. Mm-hmm. It's just when he didn't get that explosive run and they were in 3rd and 7, you know, I think there were a couple sacks and a couple pressures during that part of the game as well, including one very big one late in the fourth quarter. You know, the two times they had the chance to run out the clock, they didn't get that crucial first down. That was a concern. But again, overall, I guess they did come back.
Yeah, so slowly the Vikings started to chip away, then became 24-21. And then right as the game ends, the Vikings are able to kick a 53-yard field goal to send this thing to overtime. And that's just where the fun started, honestly. I mean, I think Charlie and I were sitting next to each other in the press box. I think we rewrote our post-game stories about 3 different times today. But that's what makes sports so fun, is when you have games like this. So obviously the Bengals able to get the ball to start overtime, not able to do anything. Defense bails him out again. And Larry Ogunjobi, I think we need to talk about him. If I could give a game ball to anyone on the defensive side of the ball, I would give the game ball to Larry Ogunjobi, because every time I would look down from either writing or typing, I would see Larry Ogunjobi just chasing after Kirk Cousins. He made Kirk Cousins' day miserable. I don't know if Kirk Cousins really knew a lot about Larry Ogunjobi heading into this game, but he certainly does now.
Yeah, the Bengals defense as a whole, they have invested so much into that unit. So the question now is, are you able to put a defense together so quickly and not have growing pains mm-hmm. early on? Are you able to put all these defensive linemen who have never played together and have them on the same page? And again, there were moments where they weren't consistently getting pressure, where they weren't on the same page with the linebackers, and they allowed a few explosive plays over the middle. But for the majority, it was a defense that I thought was very well coached. I thought there were very few huge gaping errors mm-hmm. that were made over the course of the game, which has been a very big problem for the Bengals. On top of that, just a defensive line that you could notice is markedly improved. You know, 2 big points of the game.
Yeah, I thought defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo called a great game. I thought some of the pressure packages he had on third down today were really game-changing plays. And I thought top to bottom, they looked like a more physical unit. And that's something I know that they were striving to be. So, you know, to end the overtime period, let's just talk about the game winning play that Joe Burrow had. So post game, it looked like obviously Joe Burrow goes up to the line of scrimmage. He makes a check, and all of us in the press box can't quite figure out, did Joe check out of that, or was it Zach Taylor with this gutsy play call? Because, I mean, they were 4th and 1, and you see Joe Burrow dropping back, and you're like, they only need 1 yard. What are they doing? And then he finds CJ on a perfect, I mean, it looked like they had practiced that a million times, and it was totally unexpected for the Minnesota's defense. They had no idea it was coming. And not only are they able to get 1 yard, they were able to get 32 yards, which set up the Evan McPherson 33-yard field goal to win the game. And what we found out post game from Joe Burrow and CJ and Zach Taylor was Joe Burrow had two plays that he could go to. Zach Taylor gave him two options. Joe made the decision. And it was actually a play that they had run in practice earlier that week, but they didn't connect on it earlier this week. So I think CJ and Joe both kind of seemed surprised in a good way that it worked out.
So much of this year, as I said earlier, we'll be learning about Zach Taylor. And what I think about is like how many options players have over the course of a game. Like that, I think, is the signature play that the Bengals have in their offense, because they did today and against the Browns last season. I believe it was a great pass on a very similar play action read where Joe Burrow found Giovanni Bernard. Mm-hmm. And the fact that in their biggest do or die plays, they give they're so reliant on options, I think shows a lot about Joe Burrow and a lot about the freedom he's given overall in the offense. The other player it reminded me of was third down in the Peach Bowl in the fourth quarter with UC, where Ritter floated the ball out there. But it's very interesting because it's the exact same aggressive approach that Luke Fickell was so adamant about. When Ritter, I believe, floated that ball to the tight end on third down. And, you know, after the game, the question was, why not run out the clock? Why not run the ball up the middle? And in all seriousness, Zach Taylor, a coach with a lot of connections to Luke Fickell, showed the flip side of that. When that aggressive decision, because you have the defense so off balance, works, that is an incredibly valuable play when you're able to make that work. And in a lot of ways, I feel like Fickell is a little validated with how CJ Uzomah cut that ball today.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I also just hate remembering that, because Bengals Beat podcast listeners that don't know, I'm a UC grad, Charlie's a Northwestern grad, and that game still just gives me nightmares because I was at it in Georgia and I thought it was going to be a Bearcats win and it didn't end up that way. But we're not here to talk about the Bearcats. We're here to talk about the Bengals. And I wanted to bring up something. So on Twitter, as I told you guys and Charlie did too, we want to make this an interactive podcast. So I tweeted, Bengals fans, what is your biggest takeaway from the game today? Let's just read a couple of the responses because there seemed to be a trend. They kept fighting on defense even when it looked like we could lose. The interior defensive line. All the new guys showing out. More about the Bengals interior defensive line. Year 3 of Anarumo's defense looks respectable. Run defense is elite. The impact of the interior defensive line on the game was greater than any game in 2020. The D-line is legit. The interior D-line is the problem. Jamar Chase looks to be the real deal. Joey B is the man. Defense looked significantly improved. So, I mean, there seemed to be a common theme. I think the biggest takeaway for most Bengals fan was about the defense, which I don't think we were expecting heading into this game, right?
So I think there were a very wide range of projections for the Bengals season. Sports Illustrated had them at 3. I'd seen them as high as 10. I think we can pretty much rule out the 3 to 5 range now, maybe even the 3 to 6 range. Mm-hmm. Because of the respectability of the defense, because of the consistency of the pressure, because of what impressed me about the offensive line and the run game working together on the same page, because of how Jamar Chase looks ready and looks like he's going to be a rare rookie that plays a significant role from the very start, unlike, you know, even T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd have done. And because, again, I think Joe Burrow showed today that you know, he's not a tier three quarterback. He's a tier two or above into where he can be going forward.
Joe Burrow's moxie is impressive to see in person. That's one of my biggest takeaways so far. But before we kind of talk about what are our biggest questions about this team, I do think we should talk about the offensive line, because we talked so much about that being one of the biggest questions. Joe Burrow, I haven't had a chance to go through all of the statistics, but sacked 5 times.
That sounds about right. And there were a few of the few very big hits in there as well. Yeah. So it was kind of similar to, you know, it wasn't the Eagles or the Browns game from last year, but like there were games like this last year. It was an average Joe Burrow pressure game compared to last year, which again is an improvement over their worst. They weren't facing a team with an elite pass rusher, so you take that for what it is with a grain of salt. I don't think we have enough information yet to declare anything about the offensive line in the pass game. I was impressed with the run game, but just overall, I guess, again, nothing definitive in the bad way, but nothing definitive either way.
I'd agree with that assessment. And it's also worth noting that although we've said that the Vikings don't really have that tier one pass rusher, almost every single player or coach that you talk to today will talk about just how tough Mike Zimmer's defense is. Zach Taylor saying this is one of the best defenses we'll face, and he's happy that game is in the past. And so there's definitely a lot to good to take away from this. But when we look at it, and we'll obviously go back, watch the film, go through this game in depth, what's your initial biggest almost concern or maybe question you have now that you've been able to see the Bengals play a real regular season game?
I mean, it's just two very obvious things. What do they do against elite pass rushers, and what do they do against elite wide receivers? Adam Thielen, the ability he had to really just break away in space over the middle of the yep. field. And Adam Thielen's a great receiver. He's probably a B+, A- receiver on that overall curve. But you know, next week, Chicago is a better receiver than Adam Thielen. The week after that's Pittsburgh. They have one of the stronger receiving cores in the league. The week after that is Jacksonville. Doesn't quite have as much, but following that is Green Bay, an elite passing attack. So against units like that, especially without Trey Waynes, how much are quarterbacks able to pick on Bengals cornerbacks with their elite wide receivers compared to, or showing what some of the Vikings did today?
Yeah, my biggest questions are on the defensive side of the ball, and that's at cornerback and at linebacker, because like you alluded to earlier, the Vikings really started to take advantage of the Bengals' second level on defense. They were throwing the ball over the middle, and it really seemed like they saw something that they could take advantage of, and I'll be interested to see how the Bengals adjust from that, because when you look at the players, I'm curious to see if that will be a common theme for Bengals as opponents to try and kind of attack their linebacker group, because they don't have that ultimate playmaker there. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. And I'm worried about the cornerback depth, because Eli Apple, what you saw from him today, and you talked about some of those receivers they're going to go up against, if they suffer one more injury, whether it's to Hilton or Cheeto at corner, it's going to be tough, because Eli Apple just, it was a step down from what you had hoped the Bengals secondary would be, because that was one of the strengths heading into it. So my biggest questions come on the defensive side of the ball, because I saw some vulnerability there.
Now, on the other hand, I think Jobe Awuzie played very well. Yeah. Justin Jefferson, with the exception of one big play, was very limited for most of the game. And he probably had a lot of his yardage after, I think, Jesse Bates missed a tackle on him in, I think, the fourth quarter. That was a big part of Justin Jefferson's limited yardage. They were able to hold him in check today. And he is an elite wide receiver. But again, it takes depth in the secondary. That's what the Bengals have based their entire system on. And that depth wasn't enough against Adam Thielen, a Vikings team that has multiple very great pass catchers. So, again, against teams with weapons like that, say Pittsburgh, Baltimore are two great examples of that, and Cleveland's an outstanding example of that. What's the strategic approach against wide receiving units like that?
Mm-hmm. And we can debate this, and we can go through every single play, and we can find positives and negatives, you know, throughout the whole game. But the most important stat is that the Bengals won. And as you mentioned, Joe Burrow said, "I don't think we would have won that game." And I thought what he said was interesting, because earlier in the week, reporters asked Joe Burrow how important winning in week one is. And he kind of shrugged the question off and said, "It's, you're trying to win every week. No week's different." Today, he said, So I kind of shrugged it off when you guys asked me this earlier this week, but I'm just going to tell you right now, winning in week one is really important.
That's Joe Burrow.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to say, so should we believe anything you say at the podium to us on Wednesdays or what? All right. Well, that's it for Charlie and I recapping this week one win. Bengals fans, go enjoy it. And we'll be back to get you ready for the Bengals week two game, their first road trip against the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field on Sunday. Have a good night.